Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Dolores King Williams, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Andy Clements, Christopher Graybill, Jeff Baker, Lily Beacon, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Amanda Thickpenny, Michael Glenn, Tim Gatman, Mort Shelby, Elizabeth Demery, Ken Jackson, Johan Detweiler, Nathaniel Perry, Chris Rowan, and Greg Reinfeld. Deathlands number 42, Way of the Wolf.
Showtime, Doc.
Ryan Cotter shifted casually in the long shadows of morning, a flexing of muscles that most people might have missed, bringing himself around to face the coming troubles squarely. But several of the men among the 26 Coldhearts gathering in front of Doc and him took notice. Their hands dropped to their weapons. Ryan's own hand touched the butt of the Sig Sauer P226, holstered on his right hip. He was tense, knowing what he and his companions faced, and knowing they had a slim chance of walking through the coming fire unscathed. Only he and Doc were visible, but they were all on triple red. Christy Roth, J.B. Dix, Jack Lauren, Mildred Wyeth, and Ryan's son, Dean, hid in the forest beyond the clearing, watching over them.
What the hell you doing out here, old man?
The clearing under the tall trees held the promise of defensible positions, but only if Ryan and his companions didn't get cut down before they could make a move toward the enemy. Of course, Ryan had made sure the odds were tilted in their favor as best he could. He was no greeny stoop when it came to trapping and being trapped. This day, he was the trapper, but he'd had to step into the lion's den to get it done. Rough-hewn, and stamped by violent events as a true son of Deathlands often was, Ryan stood over 6 feet tall and weighed slightly over 200 pounds, much of it hard muscle. His curly black hair framed a sun-bronzed face, but the dark color was picked up again in the weathered patch that covered his left eye. He carried the Sig Sauer pistol in a worn, serviceable holster at his right hip and held the Steyr bolt-action sniper rifle in his right hand. His finger rested inside the rifle's trigger guard, the safety off. Doc looked at the man who'd spoken to him, spreading his hands to indicate the small packages spread across the rough woolen blanket before him.
Why, my dear fellow, I came here to conduct a little free enterprise.
Trading?
The very thing.
The gang members were mostly young, Ryan noted, but they had all the moves down. It wasn't anything military or a result of organized drills. They ranged the way a pack of natural predators moved against a possible enemy or a potential victim. Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner gave them the impression of a victim, which was why Ryan had delegated him spokesman. Doc was nearly 6 feet 3 inches in his stocking feet, but built as gangly as a stork. Silvery white hair framed his face and brushed his shoulders. He'd washed his clothes in a small stream the group had camped by overnight. The dress shirt hadn't come entirely white. Still, it looked presentable with the black string tie and the Victorian black frock coat that held a greenish hue and luster that time had ground into the garment. Black pants and cracked leather knee boots completed the look. The lion's head walking stick, really a sword stick, was an affectation of Doc's, not a necessity. The speaker was a big man, broad across the shoulder and narrow at the hip, almost looking too large for the dappled gray mare beneath him. Like the other men, he wore chaps over denim jeans and a sheepskin coat with the sleeves roughly hacked off. A violet and white striped bandana circled his head. Blue tattoos of knives and naked women and impossible monsters marked his arms and face, making him one with the rest of the group. Ryan knew the purpose of the tattooing was to bind the group together. Once marked, there was nowhere the recipient could go without his history catching up to him. It tied him to the band forever.
You could have done your trading in town.
I could have traded in town, but the forest is my theater, and here I owe no man. I had been told that any business conducted within the Ville had to pay a tariff to the sect chief.
Ryan and his companions knew the sect chief from an earlier wreck. They'd come out of a Matrans unit in what used to be southern Kentucky early the previous day, worn and lathered from the events at the mall. The jump had been a hard one, and Doc had slept most of the preceding 24 hours, recovering from the effects. Living off the land in the Berland Mountains region was easy pickings for the survivalist group. What wasn't so easy was finding ammo for their weapons. All of them were running low after the last bit of killing, and the redoubt they'd arrived in had contained no ammunition. But it did yield many items they could trade for what they needed. Then Ryan had heard about Hazard, the nearest Ville, from a hunter he'd met in the deep woods the previous evening when he and Jack had been tracking mule deer. According to the hunter, the sect chief's name was Liberty, and he ran Hazard's buffer zone, keeping the area clear of muties. The people put up with a band of cold hearts, as long as no violence was directed at any of the citizens. Now Liberty sat in a horse-drawn buggy that had once been an old Ford convertible sedan from pre-dark times. The front end had been cut out, leaving the steering intact. Two horses stood in traces before the vehicle. Lean, his face clean-shaven but shadowed by tattoos, his hair cut short enough to show more tattoos on his scalp, the man sat impassively with his legs in the rear seat and his butt on the trunk. A Winchester lever-action rifle leaned against the seat at his side. A dwarf in silver and blue livery occupied a makeshift bench seat across the empty space where the engine had been. A wriggled scar pulled his mouth out of line as he gazed at Ryan. There weren't as many tattoos on the little man, but they were there just the same.
So you're out here trying to avoid the tax?
Yes. Being a free man, I have no love for most barons. They are generally only tyrants with self-aggrandized titles.
Ryan knew he was drawing more stares than Doc. The gang had already written off the old man as harmless. But Ryan had counted on that. The riders didn't know about the big Lamar pistol Doc had hidden behind a nearby tree.
If you're gonna do business in these parts, you're gonna pay a tax.
I thought the wares I'm exhibiting might preclude any such taxation without representation.
The rider looked uncertain, obviously not following all of the words the old man used. He peered over his shoulder, back at the Hazardville sect chief.
What he's saying, Phylox, is that he thinks the stuff he's got is worth so much he ain't gonna have to pay a tax because we're gonna like it so much.
Mister, I ain't seen nothing we couldn't live without. And if I did, I'd take it anyway.
Always happy to see a confirmed consumer.
Doc looked beyond the man called Phylox.
Mayhap I could have your name, sir, since it appears I am going to be conducting my business with you instead of your associate.
As Phylox came forward, Doc stood his ground, both hands resting lightly on the lion's head sword stick.
I warrant, young man, that you should remember what's been said about respecting one's elders.
If I get a hankering, I'll beat you to death, gray hair.
Instead of stepping aside, Doc reached out and seized the horse's reins. Phylox grabbed for his saddle pommel, but missed. He rolled away from the rearing horse and jumped to his feet.
Why you?
The sec man pulled his pistol, fisting it in one beefy hand, while he tried to hold on to the horse's reins with the other.
Phylox, you pull up right now or I'll chill you myself.
The big man froze into place, shooting the sec chief a glare that told Ryan that he was contemplating disobeying the order. Ryan closed his hand around the Six Sour's butt. Liberty pulled up the Winchester.
I said pull up, you stoop bastard!
This is what it's gonna come to, Liberty. We start protecting some bastardville, tying ourselves down like nurse mamas, then we're gonna start taking guff from an old fool.
We're gonna do what I say we're gonna do. That ain't gonna change. Ever. You don't like how I call the shots? You're free to pull up stakes and ride on.
Ryan's respect for Liberty rose. The one-eyed man had ridden as lieutenant for the traitor in years gone by. Keeping the crew of Warwag 1 in line had been demanding, and a weak man, or one hesitant to kill someone who spoke out against him, wouldn't have lasted a tick of a cron. Phylox's displeasure with his commander showed in the dark blood that filled his face. He shoved his pistol back into his holster and gathered his horse's reins. He mounted and rode to the back of the band. As he passed, another man pulled out of the crowd and rode with Phylox.
What about you, One-Eye? You got a name?
Is it important? Man you're gonna be dealing with is standing there in front of you.
Like to know who I'm dealing with.
This is Doc Tanner. He's the man you're dealing with.
Who's your friend, Doc?
My boon companion. A man I'd travel the river with, no matter where it took me or how treacherous it became.
He got a name?
Indeed he does. There are some who call him No Man.
No Man? What the fuck kind of name is that?
A proud one, sir, with a long lineage. In history's past, even long before Skydark set in and swept the old world away with nuclear winter and cataclysmic contortions of the Earth, No Man was renowned as a giant killer.
Giant killer? Seen some bastard big muties, but none I'd rightly call a giant.
In those days, giants roamed the Earth.
The dwarf craned his head and looked back over his shoulder at Liberty.
He's talking about the Odyssey, Chief. It's from an old book that was ancient, like he said. Man in there was named Odysseus. Had a big war. Then he was trying to get home, only he kept having these adventures that kept getting in the way. Odysseus used the name No Man to kill a giant without the other giants knowing he was there.
Ah, someone who knows literature.
I was a teacher once.
You have fallen on hard times, my friend.
He's alive and he's got a job. A lot of men can't say that. Ain't that right, Albert?
Right, Chief.
Ryan's attention centered on Phylox. At the end of the band, a third man had fallen in beside him. Ryan reached up and touched the corner of his eye patch, as if he were scratching a small itch. The prearranged signal would alert Jack Lauren and send the albino teen into motion. Evidently, Liberty had done some thinking about his overconfidence in riding up to face the two lone men in the forest.
Now, let's talk about what you got and what you want for it.
Doc grabbed the lapels of his frock coat, the sword stick casually tucked up under his left arm. He put on a smile and an appearance of merriment. Ryan had long ago decided that Doc was a born huckster. With his love of words and all the tangled histories that threaded through Doc's mind, Ryan was certain the man could talk a cannibalistic sticky 9 days from its last lunch out of its next meal. Sometimes Matran's jumps left the old man's brain addled for days, but the effects of the previous day's jump had already left his system. The line of men moved around, coming naturally into a half moon in front of the woolen blanket. The move also developed a scrimmage line of sorts. Ryan noted with satisfaction that the men lined up in the positions that he'd planned for. He maintained his ground. Albert the dwarf shook out his traces. Liberty maintained his seat in the back of the convertible, the rifle resting easily across his knees.
What about you, One-Eye? You gonna take a look, too?
I've already seen it.
I guess it must have took you twice as long as most people. Get the feeling you don't exactly trust me.
Like a good hunting knife, trust cuts both ways.
Ryan looked past the sec chief, but he could no longer see Phylox or the men who rode with him. He hoped that none of the gang looked up. The ropes above had been impossible to completely hide among the branches, and white scarring showed where limbs had been hacked away. The skin around the scar on his face tightened as the final cards were about to be played. He had 7 rounds for the Steyr and a full clip plus 3 for the Sig Sauer. Usually, the companions didn't get so low on ammo. There were places to trade, and there were the redoubts that they had access to that sometimes hadn't been opened in 100 years. Pressing on past hazard didn't make any kind of sense unless they were better armed. And if it had been possible to trade without getting their throats cut, Ryan would have been all for it. Only Liberty and his band didn't have a reputation for dealing from the top of the deck. Doc unveiled the denim shirts and pants in neat stacks on the woolen blanket. He then revealed the dozen packs of manufactured playing cards they'd raided from personnel lockers in the redoubt. Deathlands had their own pasteboards, many of them crude and hand-drawn. In some areas, a deck of pre-dark playing cards brought top jack.
Let me see that deck!
Doc reached down for the cards. Ryan remembered the deck. The cards held pictures of creamy female beauties from a bygone era, clothed rather than naked like some of the decks, but oozing sexuality nonetheless.
Ah, a connoisseur of fair feminine beauty. Do be careful with it. They are quite valuable.
Liberty took the box and opened it. He held a number of the cards, some of the mounted men crowding in close to him to get a better look. Ryan gazed in the direction Phylox and his men had gone, guessing he'd never see the men. Nor would he see Jack, because the albino was one of the deadliest killers around. The sec chief shoved the cards back together. He made no effort to hand the cards back, and a handful of the secmen around him cast covetous eyes on the prize their leader had selected.
What else do you have? A few knives, military blades, with a sheen and a luster not seen often in these times.
One of the men pointed at a blade that could have doubled as a small machete.
Yeah, that one.
Doc picked up the weapon.
Show the rest of it!
Ryan knew that the gang leader was only buying time. The deal had been closed with a deck of cards, and the larceny in Liberty's warped soul wouldn't let him settle for anything less than all of the prizes displayed on the blanket. Trader had a saying, before a man learned to recognize honest emotion in a lover's eyes, he had to learn to spot greed in the eyes of a man waiting to cut a deal. The one-eyed warrior saw greed all over Liberty. The sec chief wasn't used to playing his cards close to the vest. Most people he dealt with saw it coming.
I have salves and ointments, antibacterial lotions for preventing infections, and antibiotics for inflammations, and diseases that do occur in spite of the best efforts.
The tubes and vials lay spread out across the blanket, each clearly marked by the Red Cross emblem and military markings. Doc held up a short, wide-mouthed blue jar.
There is even some topical anesthetic, good for dental problems, as well as limited invasive surgeries. As you can see, sir, I have quite a selection of valuable merchandise.
Stuff you got. It's worth a lot of jack.
A man in my position likes to hear that as an opening comment from a potential buyer.
Where'd you get this stuff?
Scavenging. This area is still rocked by the occasional quake. My friend and I stumbled across a subterranean site that must have been heretofore undiscovered, possibly covered over, then pushed to the surface by tremors like a boiling pocket of pus.
And you got lucky enough to find it.
My dear sir, it was bound to be found by someone.
That the way you're gonna tell it, one eye?
Maybe. If I was of a mind to tell it.
I came here to deal, not dicker. If you're not interested enough, reckon we'll push on.
I'm interested. I'd be more interested in knowing where you got this.
That would be stoop. If we told you where, you could go get your own. You wouldn't need to buy what we got to offer.
So if I buy this, you'd tell me where you found it?
I'd sell you the location.
You saying there's more?
Maybe.
And how am I supposed to trust you?
We're here. We could have let your people ride on past us.
Wrong! We cut your sign almost 2 hours ago.
If you'd have followed it back instead of following us, you'd have found that trail dropped off into the edge of nowhere, and one of the streams through this area. Look all you want. You won't find where we came from.
You think you're a canny son of a bitch, don't you?
I'm a man still standing in my own boots and making my own way.
A bullet changes all that.
Changes it for any man. I spent a few cartridges myself, permanently changing the thinking of some folks.
What do you want for this, old man?
How much of it?
All of it.
We want some ammo as an exchange.
Ammo?
He smoothly raised the Winchester from his knees and aimed it at Ryan.
Goodbye, One-Eye!
Jack knew death as an intimate experience. It measured in heartbeats, from the last one to the next one that didn't come. A man trained in killing knew which heartbeat to act on. He waited patiently, running a hand down the front of his camo vest. His fingertips avoided the sharp bits of metal sewn into the cloth to prevent man or beast from wanting to get too close to him. More metal bits studded his pants, providing an offense as well as a defense. He stood slightly below 5.5 feet tall, wiry and whipcord lean. His skin held the pallor of a corpse, mirrored by the shock of white hair on top of his head. Bone white and savagely scarred, as still as death, his face looked like a mask. Only the burning heat of his ruby-red eyes showed life as he watched the men before him. Phylox and the two men who rode with him dismounted from their horses a few yards back of the clearing, where Doc and Ryan conducted their business. They unsheathed their rifles and crept forward, never knowing that death dogged their heels. Lush forest growth, overgrown for decades, provided cover for Jack. He remained behind the men as they went forward. Their attention stayed on the events